Glad to be here. Glad to see all of you who are also here from various places. Always good to be together with you. Brother Mark mentioned earlier Matthew 28:19-20 and Mark 16:15-16. And those two passages, to boil it down, to quote Mark 16, says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believes and baptized shall be saved." The point is, he said, go into all the world. And that not only was spoken to the apostles, and that's particularly who it's spoken to, because they were the ones those words were directed to, and they were responsible for it. And that's the reason they were chosen, to maintain the work after Christ had passed on. But we notice in the Bible, as we look forward from that point forward for just a little while, there was a primary emphasis on the Lord's teaching and church in Jerusalem. There were 3,000 first, and then there were 5,000, the Bible says, men. And then the next chapter says there were multitudes, both the men and women. We don't know how many that consisted of, but as Brother Sam said, if you have 5,000 men, and assuming each person's married had two children, might have 10 children, might have none, you can talk about 20,000 people. So there were a lot of people in Jerusalem who were responsible to the Lord, and hearing his word had been baptized. And they were growing to the point at which there was quite a bit of concern, I imagine, among the Jews, particularly the Pharisees, about what was going on among Christianity. In the meantime, the Bible tells us in Acts chapter 7 that Stephen was a person who was very prone to teach the word and to maintain the truth. And has had opportunity to speak and gave a beautiful sermon in Acts chapter 7 about the Lord's work throughout the ages and how to come down to the point at which Christ died for our sins and established his church. And then as he was near the end of his sermon, he was so opposed, they ran on him, they beat him with their teeth, and then they stoned him to death. Well, the heat was so hot among the Christians from the opposite side, that the Bible tells us in the next chapter that the disciples were scattered abroad and went everywhere preaching the word except the apostles. Now, the commission was given to the apostles to go into all the world, but they remained there. But the disciples began to scatter and went everywhere. They went north to Antioch, they went south down to Gaza. They went all through that same area, eventually into what we know of today as Asia, as a Turkey, Asia Minor back in those days. And the gospel began to be spread, primarily by people like you and me, who may have been persecuted at that time. We're not nearly like they were. And the truth spread to various parts of the world. Eventually, it went, as you well know, into Europe. And the first congregation was just to the east of Turkey. And from there it spread into other parts of the world, to Greece, to Rome. And then we noticed that Paul on one occasion was shipwrecked on the island of Malta, by the way, where we have a congregation today. And from there he went up toward Rome. And as he went toward Rome, brethren from Rome came down to meet him. So the gospel had gone to Rome before Paul ever got there. Now Paul on one occasion mentioned to go into Spain. And then when Carly Connor and his wife was with me in England a few years ago, we went to Bath. Now, Bath is a hot springs, the only one I know of in the entire nation of England. And there they had hot springs that gave baths for the Romans primarily, because they were the ones who occupied that part of the country at that time. And it was a very, very proper place to be. For those who had money and those who were the elite. And they had this very hot system they took baths in at that time. Well, then, a few years ago, when they were excavating that and digging up the mud and such like that had been there for centuries, there was found a little piece of metal about this long, but a small piece of metal. And Carly and his wife and I saw it. And on that piece of metal, dating almost 2,000 years, it mentions the fact that there then there were Christians and those who were not Christians. So both groups are mentioned in the first century, beginning of the second century in England. So the gospel has spread that far, we know, because we see evidence of it. Then, of course, the writings in the very early centuries in England as well. Having seen what I'm talking about there, the word of God began to spread in New Bed because people had a mission in mind of sharing the truth with others, like the Bible very plainly said for them to do. Given to the apostles, of course, but on the other hand, it was carried out when the apostles died by people like you and me who scattered throughout various parts of the world. We have records of the apostles going to various parts of the world, Paul particularly, we read about, of course, in the New Testament. In the meantime, you and I have inherited a great blessing that probably we, unless we think seriously, cannot really appreciate what we have. I was talking to a brother just yesterday, and talking about his background in the Lord's Church. He was born into a family that goes to the Lord's Church. He was reared in that family. He is through college now, has a job now in Georgia, and his background is strictly Church of Christ every way. He says, I have to every once in a while look back and see, am I right? Am I sure I'm right? And the reason why is because he's never known anything else but the Church of Christ. I said, well, I have an advantage in a way because I was not a member of the Church of Christ. And being a Methodist and a sectarian, looking at it from a sectarian point of view, then when I found the truth, it was just like a light turned on for me because it was such a contrast to what I had known. And that's the way it is with many people. Many people have been reared in tradition to the point at which if you're born to the members of the Church of Christ family, then, of course, that's all you've ever known. But the world around us has a lot more of error to believe and to get rid of to become member of the Lord's Church, as like Brother Mark talked to us about a while ago. But I mentioned those things to go back in history a little bit with you. Back in 1659, there was a movement in England. The man who was the head of control of the government was a man whose name was Cromwell, and he was a man who had a lot of authority in England. He was not king, but he had a great deal of authority, and there was a law passed at that time that nobody could meet and worship within 5 miles of a Church of England. Now, outside that, you could, but you could not meet and worship within 5 miles of the Church of England, and any of the priests of the Church of England who would not accept that and accept the confession of faith and were being supported by the Church of England, had a house from the Church of England, if they didn't accept that, they'd be cut off and they could not serve any longer. And, of course, that's what several of them did. There's one in the southern part of Ireland who did a work of that kind, just like I'm about to suggest to you. And then there was a man up in the lower part of England whose name was Gabriel Campbellford. He was a priest of the Church of England. He did not agree to go along with what the decree was, so he had to move outside of the 5 mile limit. And he said, let's go back to the Bible and do what the Bible says and not listen to what man says. They began to assemble then precisely like you and I are doing today. They had baptism as an order of obedience to the Lord. They had the Lord's Supper every first day of the week, and they did as we're doing today in our practices here in America. So that was one of the earliest churches we know of in England that came out from era and began to teach the truth and spread as we do now. There were several churches that sprung out from this particular church, and one of those we still work with today. It's a place in northern England. We've been there and visited with them. And in fact, I have a recording and an article that has been taken from that recording of a brother now dead who knew a great deal about that history. We've been out to the church building that Brother Campbell Ford met at. He is buried in the cemetery outside. And so a marvelous history about that early beginning of the Lord's Church. Now, at that particular time, since this decree was there and since few of the people saw fit to go back to the Bible pattern, some of those had to come to America to get away from the tyranny of the Church of England and from the laws that were being made at that time. You know of them as the Puritans. They came to America and they began to appreciate the freedom of religion that they had here they did not have in England. And other settlements came along as well, particularly in the eastern part of our nation. And eventually, then, in due time, there were those here in America who had the same idea that Campbellford did, and that is, we won't go along with sectarianism. We want to return back to the Bible pattern. And we can date this about latter part of 1700s, 1792 to be precise, if you want to look at it. We'll go into the study of that later on, but if you wish to. But in the meantime, the church began to spread over here, particularly in the eastern part of our nation, to the point at which it went north and south, and pretty well spread throughout the part of the world that we're in right now. Churches began to spring up, they began to go forth, and finally went out toward beyond the Mississippi River, and eventually reached as far as California, where we have some congregation now we're working with. In the meantime, though, there was a war which most of us know of as the Second World War. And at that particular time, there was a great deal of persecution in Germany against those who believed precisely as we do, practicing exactly what we're practicing. They did not know about the church in England, didn't know a thing about it, didn't know a thing about the churches in America, not a thing about it. And there was one man there who was living, put in a concentration camp. He had a long history of being members of and his family members of the Church of Christ. And then in the congregation, in the concentration camp where he was in prison, he remembered there were three congregations of the Lord's Church remaining of many that were there. Only three he knew of. He saw them die one by one. And he decided, while the war was still going on, the Lord's Church has vanished from the face of the earth. No congregation yet exists. Well, of course, you know and I know that Daniel chapter 2 tells us that would never happen. The Lord's Church would stand forever. It would not be left to anyone else, but it would stand forever. But in the meantime, when the war was ended and American soldiers and others began to go into that part of the world, he became aware of the fact that their churches in America, I didn't know about. Now, he's written a book about that. And a brother that I knew very, very well in England, who's now dead, knew this brother and talks to me about him. And in that book, here's what the brother said. He said, I thought the flame of truth had gone out in Europe. I did not know it existed at all. What I didn't know is that 200 years before the Lord allowed the torch of truth to go out in Europe, he had taken that torch and put it in American soil far from here 200 years before that time. The Lord's Church continues. In a book, he writes about the Lord's Church going back in time through places like Romania and Bulgaria and places that we know very little about, back to the early days of the church. The Lord's Church has always been. It's had its difficulty, it's had its problems, it's had its disasters, but the Lord's Church has always been and always will be. And even though we are getting smaller ourselves in number in this nation, the Lord's Church still stands and always will. That leads us then back to the thing we began this a few moments ago. The book of Matthew and Mark tell us that the commission to the apostles is being carried out by individuals like you and me today to share that truth with others around us. We have a great deal owed to people like Barton Stone and Alexander Campbell and others we could name, that in the early days of the 1800s, they stood for truth, many times were opposed, but the truth began to spread. And that's what God knew. And I feel like, personally, that's what God meant when he allowed the torch of truth to be carried from England over to America to the point at which it could grow and prosper and now could expand to different parts of the world where precisely that's what we're doing. Now, we're so thankful we're members of the Lord's Church. We have a great deal of treasure there that I hope we can appreciate more and more as we get older in age, as we mature in mind more and more, and we're able to appreciate so much that God blessed us with his glory to be members of his church, children of his family. But it must not stop there with us. It must go beyond that point. And that's what we as those of us here who know each other have been praying for several years. That's what we have been doing in recent years. It's going from America here too. We're going from America to other parts of the world where the door has been opened for us. Some of the early work that some of us are involved with and those that we are acquainted with have been involved with came in 1940s. At this time, there was a person in India who found out about us. He contacted us, and that work began to grow and spread. In fact, one of the sons of this man came to America, went to college, learned a great deal about life and about the church and about the truth, but he never did go back to India. He went to England, and as far as I know, he has done nothing for the Lord's church. But the church in India continued on. In the meantime, that work is continuing on in the hands of others, particularly in Texas and Arkansas, who are supporting that work. Then we have a brother down in Africa who found a paper being published here in America, and then a copy of it got somewhere over there, and he contacted Brother Mickey, as most of you know. And as a consequence of that contact, then our brethren began to Brother Mickey, and others went over to Africa, began to work with this brother. And that's the way we began, first of all, to work in Africa a number of years ago. In the meantime, I was doing some work in North Carolina. I met a brother up there who was doing some work in Mexico, and found out about some things that they were doing there. So I went down with them to visit Mexico, and then our work down there began to grow and prosper. And then a few years after that, then we had a brother who was in the Navy. We advised him not to go into it. He did anyway. He went to the Gulf, Arabian Gulf, transferred over there to Subic Bay in the Philippines. And when he tried to find the Lord's Church, hopefully, to meet with over there, he did find a group called the Church of Christ, or Iglesia de Cristo. And went in to find the assembly not being what he thought it was going to be. It had instruments of music, things of that kind. And he asked a man, he said, I was looking for the Church of Christ, and this is not what I expected. The man said, I know what you're looking for. Pointed down the street where, sure enough, there was a congregation of the Church of Christ. Now, Mount Pinatubo had erupted, and I mean, really, it was not there longer. I went finally, after several years, to where Pinatubo was supposed to be. It was not there at all. It was completely gone. The water was warm. Water was still hot, flowing down the river. But Manitoubo had completely disappeared. But it had destroyed a great deal of the air, the people, the houses, the churches around it in its eruption. And one of the congregations, the congregation this brother found, had been greatly harmed physically, the building had been, by this eruption. And he did not realize they had Sunday school and women teachers. And so he was there for a while, began to see what they were doing, and he rode back over here and said, I found a church just like we are. He thought it was. And he said, come on over here. So as soon as we got the message, I went over to the Philippines and found out that they were not what we are. They were very liberal, but he didn't know it, couldn't tell it, because rooms had been destroyed and they were not having Sunday school at that time as they had been before. We talked to the leader of the congregation there, and about a week after we had discussed with them and finally brought it to a head, we mentioned 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, 1 Timothy 2, 11, 12, about our views on dividing the assembly and women teachers. They sit and listen patiently. And then in a few minutes, Brother Rudy spoke up and he said, Brother Harry, he says, we have known all the time those verses are in the Bible that's used. But the American evangelists who come over here and told us they didn't mean exactly what we thought they meant. And explained them away, explained that we can have divided classes, we can have women teachers. He said, but now we know that we have been taught wrong. And we converted the congregation. From there we spread to the point at which we have about 40 churches down in the Philippines. Now I said these things very briefly and very fast to let you see that we spread out in a number of different places now. Presently, we're working in Tanzania, Malawi, Mozambique, and we have worked also in South Africa and in Nigeria, in Africa, working in Mexico. We're working also in Belize. Some of the brethren are doing quite a bit of work down there several times a year, particularly in spreading Bibles. in the Philippines. We have worked in England, we are involved with, and in the island of Malta, which is down below Italy. And then we had a congregation that just died recently in Germany. One congregation, they have three members. Finally, the old man died. Beautiful old man. I wish you could have known him. And the church there died. But that's basically where we are today, working in these parts of the world. Now, when we talk about the number of churches, I mentioned about 40 in the Philippines. We have 8 we're working with directly in Mexico, 1 in Malta, 4 in England, I can name, and then in Africa, which is the greatest work we're doing as far as numbers are concerned, I have a list of 500 churches there. Now, as Brother Danny well knows and Brother Ron well knows, not all of those are practicing precisely as we do. And so when we find those congregations that are not having the Lord's Supper, we put an effort on them to try to explain to them the fact that you do have to have the Lord's Supper. That's each first of the week, remember our Lord's death. And that's precisely what the Lord tells us to do and what we are doing. But you people are not doing this. Of course, many of them are remote. They don't even know what a grape is. And many of them are so far distant they can't get grapes as such. We found out in time that if we can take raisins to the people and we can explain to them how to reconstitute grape juice out of dried raisins, they can use that. That's what we do with the grape juice here. That's what we do. Many of the grapes that you grape juice you buy and you use at your congregations, that's reconstituted grape juice. And so that's what we do with raisins over there. They can do that. But so many of them don't. We've gone to places where before we found out they had taken water and put color in it, make it look like grape juice. Just a number of things. Some of them are not doing it at all. So, of course, those congregations we feel like are not fully practicing what they should practice and what they should do. We try to tell them these things, of course, as we have opportunity to visit with them and explain them to them. Now, we haven't been to all 500 of the churches yet. Some of them are very remote. Some of them are just starting. Some of them have grown and prospered. But we have a lot of churches in Africa that we are dealing with. Very thankful that we can. We have churches now up in Tanzania, some new churches we have just begun to work with last year. Brother Tony Whitten and I was in Tanzania last July, and I just put him on the airplane yesterday to go back to Tanzania. He and Brother Keith from Arizona are over there now, and it's going to spend about 10 days in Tanzania. We have a little problem there. They're trying to investigate what they can about who is faithful and who is not over there. And occasionally we have problems where we go because, as you might know, we're dealing with human beings. Let me say this. It'd be a beautiful, beautiful world we'd live in. A wonderful world if it didn't have people in it. But since it has people, of course, we all along realize there's going to be some problems. There was in the Bible times and there will be today. And so Brother Danny and Brother Ron can speak very devoted to this. We've had problems in Africa, and so thankful that so many times they've been able to be resolved very easily. Occasionally, we have people that will have two wives. Not often, but occasionally. And most of the time, we can't control that. Sometimes they won't repent. Sometimes they will just leave the church, join some other group. That's one of the problems over there that we have. Not great, but it occasionally occurs. And in the Philippines, while to begin with, many people in the Philippines oppose divorce and marriage, now our American Church of Christ missionaries over there, they're not with us, they're teaching divorce and remarriage is permissible, where we don't do that ourselves. So there's a problem we face over there quite often, divorce and marriage. But I'm saying these things just to give you sort of an idea where we're working, some things that are being done, and some problems that we sometimes face, and other problems we will face as time goes on. We can't go into all these problems, of course, but today, but of course, we do face them from time to time. And if you hear anything or want to know anything further about that, let some of us know who are involved there. In the work that we have been doing just this past few days, from the 1st of June, in the Philippines, we have spent $8,535. We're working there with almost 40 congregations, and we are supporting 20 brethren in the Philippines. In Africa, since the 1st of June, we have spent $7,567, and we're supporting 22 brethren in Africa. And then in Mexico, this past few weeks, I'm going to guess we spent pretty close to $600. I don't have that figure precise, but it's about $600. We're supporting five brethren in Mexico. And when I mention supporting these brethren, what I mean by that simply is this. We encourage them to have jobs, to maintain their families and their activity by working as our brethren do here in this nation, and not have the pastor system. But most of these brethren I'm talking about are those who have jobs, maybe farmers, and they're active in the Lord's work, and we're simply supporting them in going where they need to go, by gasoline, transportation, whatever the case might be. Most of the money goes that way. Now, some of the money I mentioned here, spent in these places, have gone for food, for hospitalization, for accidents they've had, for medical care, things of that kind. And if I can talk about this entire year, we have spent in Africa and the Philippines pretty close to $50,000, primarily taking care of hunger and food and things of that kind that we've had to attend to the needs of our brethren. Most of you had breakfast. Most of you dressed well. Most of you don't have too much concern about going home in an automobile and perhaps feeling well when you get home, maybe a night's sleep. Many of our brethren over in these parts of the world where we're making extremely good progress by baptizing, starting churches, many of them don't always have enough to eat a day. Sometimes they go 2 or 3 days without food. Now, don't misunderstand me. The pictures you see on television of these little babies that have enlarged stomachs and flies all around their eyes and this kind of thing, we're not talking about that. Those are things that you see on television in remote areas we're not working in. Most of our brethren have something to eat. Most of them have a place to stay. And many of them have orphans they've taken into their homes, primarily from their families, and that's the way they do it. They don't have orphans' homes, but when a sister dies and the children will be taken in by another sister or by another brother. And we have one brother over there who feeds about 19 people every day in his house, orphans and so on. But anyway, we have been able to take care, and when I say we, I'm talking about you and other brethren around who are giving financially from the treasurer, from their own personal pockets, to take care of the needs of our brethren in other parts of the world. In the Philippines, they have had a number of typhoons, which is the same thing as a hurricane, this year. And we've had a lot of destruction over there because of those typhoons. And some more coming on, by the way. Now it's the rainy season in the Philippines. In Africa, we've had a drought for about 3 years, a very serious drought. It's not over yet in the sense that when the drought is over, then they begin to have rains, then they had floods. And the crops they had planted were washed away. Now, they're still asking for money. Just got an email a couple days ago from Africa asking for more money to help people to have something to eat until the harvest comes, hopefully by September. So we have had a lot of requests, and of course, we try to help, as our brethren are very good to do so, when these needs arise. Money's not wasted. The money is being given to people who we trust, and they are supporting those who are in need by giving them food to eat. And many, many times that's the only food they have is what we supply for them. I got a letter just 2 days ago from Philippines, and they have had an extremely bad situation over there as far as weather's concerned, and such a flood that some of their brethren have had been hindered to go back to the mountains where they dig wild roots to eat. Now, not only that, but in the Philippines, we have a great problem with Muslims in the southern part of the Philippines. Our brethren have been run off of their homes. They've had to give up their land, been taken over by the Muslims. They're making such advances that many of the towns are controlled by Muslim mayors, and our brethren are put in a great deal of distress because of that reason. it's getting worse over there. But there, I'm talking about in the island of Palawan, we have a number of churches that are from the native Filipinos, that is the aborigines, who are there to begin with. They are poor people. They don't dress as others do. They live on the, many, many times, just on mats on the floor. Many times their houses are made out of bamboo, not much at all, and the hunters and gatherers. But they are faithful. They are being baptized, and they're starting churches, and they're working. And in some cases, we are supporting brethren to go in there and preach among them. But the fact is, they are faithful and dedicated, and I just wish you could meet some of them and see them. It'd be a marvelous if you could. Brother Danny and Ron, do you all want to add to what I'm saying, or in any way comment?
You're doing good.
I haven't told anything near like what you could tell or what someone else could tell about it. How about you, Ron?
No.
Okay. Anyway, our brethren here are doing a marvelous job. We have money coming in all along from across the nation to support the work that we're doing. Very rarely do we ever have to ask for money. Now, I'll just mention this for the sake of letting you know very plainly. I'm not asking for money now. Not at all. Not for a moment do I'm asking you for any money. We have two congregations represented here today and this weekend that have given $5,000 each in the last 2 or 3 days for the work that we're doing. Now, most of that's going to go to the trip that Brother Tony has just made to Tanzania, and I'm about to make with 3 other brethren from Colorado to Malawi. It'll cost Tony and those who are with him about $5,000 expense on that trip. It'll take us probably $12,000 at least in Malawi this time. We'll have all kind of needs. We'll have to meet some food, some buildings, some transportation. My brother just had a wreck over there in the truck and has damaged it severely. There's 2 brethren in the hospital over in Malawi, one pretty serious, one of our old brethren pretty serious in the hospital. Another one has just gotten out. And things of that kind that will take money. But like I mentioned, 2 congregations here represented here now, given $5,000 each for that. One sister here, who is not rich at all, very dedicated, and I've known her for many, many years, just the other day sent $250 of a check. We have a sister in New Mexico who is old. She's not employed now. As far as I know, she's living in an apartment. And she has been sending anywhere from $10 to $15, $20, $25 whenever she could. Now she can't send any more. She writes us letters that I just don't have it. Now, the point is we have brethren all through the brotherhood that are that way. Some wealthy, some not. But the work is going along very, very well. Here's what I want to tell you, though, to top that off. I got a letter just about 2 weeks ago from a sister in Arkansas. I don't know her as far as I know. And I think she found out about us by a brother I have known for many, many years in Arkansas who must have told her about our work. He lives in the same area she does. And in this letter, she sent a check for $262.30, if I remember right. And she said, "This comes from the children here who put up a lemonade stand to get this money to send to you to help the children in Africa to dig wells and have some water to drink." So just these children had a lemonade stand to send that money to help work in Africa. So what I want to say very simply is just thank you so much for the work that you've been doing to supply money for us and to give encouragement to us, and particularly for your prayers and the work that is being done. Very, very good work is being done. We have brethren there that are responsive to the truth. They are being baptized. They're starting new churches. They're teaching the word. And most of them don't get any money at all for it. It's simply a matter of being, like I mentioned in Acts chapter 8, they are sharing the truth wherever they go, whatever they're doing, and not for pay. We're just not supporting clergymen. But the work is going on very, very well. The money that's being spent is used for that purpose. And it's just marvelous to have you support the work as you have been doing. And brethren throughout our nation. We do have problems that I had mentioned, such as in the Philippines, we have churches in a place called Zimbales. And this is where the American naval base was until they asked us to close it. And we have had quite a bit of work on that for a number of years. And just now, some brethren from Alaska have come down. They're trying to work in among the churches that we are sponsoring. They are starting Sunday schools, women teachers, educational institutions, medical work. And we've had a number of brethren write us about it. And they say, we're going to stand for the truth. How many will? I don't know. I just hope most of them do. But we're always confronted with that problem of liberalism and divisive spirits coming in to follow the way of sectarians around us and to not follow the Bible pattern and what we're doing. So we're going to have problems all along as we continue to progress in the Lord's work. We can expect it. The Lord's people did to begin with, and we still will today. But just so thankful we have brethren who will stand firm and sure, teach the truth as it was taught then, practice as it was taught back then, and be dedicated in their lives. It's just a pleasure to know that we have brethren who are concerned that way and dedicated that way. Again, Danny and Ron, you don't have anything to add to what I'm saying? Any questions that brethren have? If you do have, I wish you'd ask them that we might perhaps answer those questions. I don't know how much time I've talked in my overtime.
You're right about on time.
Let me add just a little bit to that. Excuse me, but add just a little bit. I had to think of. When you think about money going over to help the people that we're speaking about, and that's what I've been talking about slightly here, they are not lazy. These people in Africa take mud out of their yard, mix it with water. They have a little wooden box. They put that mud in, and then they take it and they dump it down the ground in a little rectangular shape. They make a brick out of it. Now, these bricks by the thousands are made by their hands, and they dry in the sun. They put them in a pyramid, and they burn them with wood and smoke, fire. Now, that's what they do to build their buildings. And when that building is constructed, or about to be constructed with these bricks, we supply the cement if we can. And most of the time, we have to buy the iron sheets, as they call it, bar and tin, on top of the building, because they just don't have the money to buy it with. And occasionally, they'll buy maybe 10 sheets. They need 25. And if they buy the 10, we're just so thankful they've done that, we can supply the other 15. That's where a lot of the money goes. They put in that work up. And in the Philippines, we have a lot of brethren who build their houses and church buildings also out of bamboo. They cut the bamboo, and a few years, the termites will do away with it, but they can cast their side and build another one out of bamboo. I've been to places in the Philippines where we had a bamboo floor, had a bamboo wall, had a bamboo partitions, bamboo bed I slept on, and their stove is made out of bamboo. They have a bamboo box about this long, about this wide, in a window. And it's about that deep. It's full of dirt, and they cook on top of that dirt. So they are they're capable of doing what they need to have done. Wish I could talk about that more. I just want to tell you those things. It's not a matter of our sending money over, and they're taking advantage of us. Sometimes they do, of course. But in most cases, it's a matter of they do what they can do. We encourage that, and then we help where we can. I'll shut up. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it so much for this.